today. The first hour will be the Power Hour. Second hour will be general questions. Calls are starting to come in very heavy. There's still some time to get in if you've got a question. So if you have a question for first or second hour, go ahead and press one on your phone. The sooner you do that, the better the odds that you'll get through. We're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. I've got the guys from Pittsburgh Power here helping me out, Bruce and John and Ethan, and we will take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, troubleshooting, fuel mileage, upgrades, modifications, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. I want to welcome back the guys from Pittsburgh Power. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Great to have you here. And the questions are starting to pile up. What do we have new and exciting this week?
John, what was that list that we started?
I completely blanked on. We discussed a couple of things yesterday morning, and I did not write them down. I apologize.
I've got one written down. But, go ahead. But I'm not at my desk either, so.
Well, something I'm going to try to do every show here. We've talked about our remote tuning program, our remote dealers. I'd like to make it clear to everybody that the remote dealers aren't little mini satellite Pittsburgh Powers everywhere, though some of them are shops that carry, you know, and sell some of our equipment, dampers, balancers, mufflers, and so forth. They can get for you, but they're not our shops. They're separate shops, and I'd like to give a little shout out to one of them right now, Brent Faber, BR Faber Incorporated. He's a semi truck and heavy equipment repair in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So he's recently signed on to be one of our remote tuners. He's got everything he needs there to do, you know, our electrical, you know, any diagnostics or any tuning via remote with us. So I wanted to clarify those two things and give a little shout out to Brent.
While we're on that topic, real quick, we had a great testimonial on the show yesterday from a driver who went into T&E, and you guys did a tune, and he said his truck has never run the way it runs now. Fuel mileage is up. Performance is awesome. I mean, he couldn't go on enough about how that changed the truck.
I know we did an ISX tune there a week or two ago. I wonder if that was him.
It is. That was him.
Yep. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Terrific. It's a great idea. It's a great program.
What about the PACCAR engine with the soot separator?
Yeah, we've installed one of our soot separators. I'm still looking for a name for that thing. Called the soot separator, the soot cyclone. I'm not sure what we want to call it. But we've actually repeated our numbers that we had on the DD15 that we did. We've seen a reduction in DEF consumption. We've seen a reduction in exhaust gas temperature, which was a kind of a happy problem on the PACCAR. The PACCAR actually monitors that, and it sent back what they call a suspect parameter number. So it had a trouble code that was inadvertently caused by our device, but the code was for low EGT. And our test truck on the DD15, the fellow watches pretty carefully on his Kevin Rutherford scan gauge the calculated exhaust gas temperature. And he's seen about 150 degree decrease across the board in that. So we're
wow.
Repeating our numbers. So it's huge, Kevin. We've got about a 30% decrease in DEF consumption, which is controlled solely by the NOx sensor. The upstream NOx sensor tells it how much DEF to administer to get the NOx down to the accepted level that's programmed into the ECM. So with the 30% reduction, I mean, our tailpipe emissions right now are exactly what they were, but we're doing it with less DEF, which means we're creating less NOx from the engine. And we've also seen fuel mileage increases as well. They're big. I half don't want to believe them, but we've seen 1 mile per gallon with both of these trucks right now.
Well, here's the thing, and it will be really interesting to track that fuel mileage further, because I fully expect, I have never seen anything that would reduce DEF consumption by 30%. That's incredible.
Well, if you couple that with the temperature, you know, the NOx production, you know, that's created by pressure and temperature. And so we're seeing the lower temps. So trying to combust that soot that was making its way into the engine was affecting the combustion process. I'm sure the sharp engineers at the engine manufacturers know this, and we're tuning around it, or tuning to try to compensate for it, just because they didn't think there was a practical way to remove the stuff, which from what my research shows me, I've studied a whole lot of SAE papers and so forth on the subject. And there were a couple attempts at this, and there were some really cool studies done on filtered EGR, but they used this great big monstrous bag house, basically, with these expensive ceramic membrane filters to filter it perfect. You know, they had it down to 99.9% pure, zero soot in it at all. And they saw huge increases or decreases in the amount of NOx produced. So there are some science behind it, and I'll make no claims to get it all out of there. If we're getting 60 or 70% of it out, I think we're doing pretty good. But that's still a huge jump. So, yeah. If it continues to impress. So we're now in the process of applying for a patent, and we're looking into ways to produce it cheaper. Right now, I'm TIG welding each of them up by myself, or I have a little young helper guy who's a really good welder who helps me with it and fitting all the pieces myself. And so it's now I'm studying different production methods and ways to make it affordable, and then we're going to look into the different applications and having all the piping mandrel bent and getting it into kit form. It's complicated for us to install, but once we have a kit in place and all the pieces mandrel bent, it will be quite easy for anybody to install.
Very, very cool. That's exciting. That's in fact, I would have to say that, you know, in the last 10 plus years, we've been dealing with emissions and all the problems and all the things we've come up with and the ideas and improvements. I don't remember anything that exciting as what you're seeing on this already. That's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, the results are almost back to delete days. It's almost as good as taking the stuff off was, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I had that question yesterday. Somebody said, should I delete? And I said, no, not anymore. There was a time we were saying it was the only thing we knew what to do. It was the only way we could make these things run right. I'm saying not anymore. You guys have got this figured out, and you're making strides every day. In fact, I said, you know, you can ask me which engine they're tuning, and I'll probably be wrong because they're adding new stuff every week. So I'd love Tuesdays because I get all the updates.
Great. So do we. I love doing the show.
Yeah, good stuff. Anything else, or should we get to some calls?
Well, Kevin, I became a grandfather last night.
You congratulations.
Did. Yes, congratulations. That's exciting.
And I'm standing here in the Vail Hospital right now. Clayton's in the X-ray room. He broke his heel on a ski jump on Sunday. So, the doctor shows up, I'll have to disappear off the show.
Painful. Ooh.
Yeah. So, Bruce, what do you have? I didn't know. What's the grandchild?
We have a little boy.
Uh-huh. Did you buy him a
awesome
deal yet?
Yep. So, anyway, I think we should get to some calls.
We should. Bruce, did you buy him a snowmobile yet?
No,
I've still got all of my son's old I've got an old baby cart still. I've got an old 50cc two-stroke baby cart.
He lives in Austin, Texas, so we don't know. So it'll be probably something for Lake Austin before that.
Got it. There you go. All right, let's get to some phone calls. We have a question that I had yesterday on the show, and I wanted you guys to kind of add to the answer. Let's go to Stuart in Utah. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate your time. I also appreciate everything you guys do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I had an issue. I had a brand new truck, 2017 Freightliner, and I took it in for my first oil change after the break-in oil at 25,000, and the guy put in 2.5 gallons of oil more than what he should have, I didn't check the oil level on that when I left. I just went and grabbed the load. We boogied out of there. It didn't seem like it was running right, and I was checking it, and I checked the oil, and it was, you know, 2 inches, inch and a half, 2 inches up on the dipstick. So we had to get that pumped out of there. They went to another place, and they removed it, and now it's, you know, back to normal. But I'm worried about any damage that might cause. I'll have to worry about, like, seals in the future because of that. I worry about.
This was a DD15, and they put about 1,000 miles on it with that oil in there.
Correct.
What we have seen is if you have oil coming out of the turbo, but more so front and rear crank seal.
Hold that answer, Bruce. We're going to get the break. We'll come right back, and we will talk about that. Yeah, I wanted to follow up with you guys on this one and see if there's anything specifically on the DD15 that we may need to watch for. Now we'll talk about that right after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got the guys from Pittsburgh Power, and we're talking with Stuart in Utah. So, Bruce, go ahead.
Okay, we had built a KTA Cummins, a 19-liter engine for a coal mine down in Kentucky, and we had it filled with oil, and their mechanic filled it again, so we were 100% over, and they ran it. And it pushed out the front and rear crank seal. Other than that, there was no damage. So 2.5 gallon high, don't think you're going to have a problem. John, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think if you had a problem, you'd have it now. I don't think there's going to be anything lasting or anything to keep an eye on in the future. If it would have popped the seal, you would know about it for sure right now.
All right, great.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I thought. I just wanted to run that by you guys to make sure. Let's go to Texas. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hey, guys. I have a question for Bruce, the N14 man. I've got a N14 red top in a 99 Volvo with an 18, 13 speed and 373 gears. And until recently, I was more of a backup driver, and now I'm in full control of the operation and trying to get a handle on my fuel costs. And when I'm driving it, it really feels like it's happiest at about 14,475 RPMs, but that puts me at like 55 miles an hour or 65 miles an hour. And I'm wondering, what is the happy zone on the N14, really? Because if I get up to about 58 miles an hour, I'm running a little over 1,500. And so, you know, I kind of drive off the seat of my pants as far as how the engine feels. But I don't want to be pushing the engine. But if I can get a little more speed, something in between, you know, if I can get up to like 60, and the RPMs are at 1550. Is that pushing this engine? Just from a
on the level, I don't think you want to be that high. Going up hills and grades, that's a perfect RPM. When you're at 1450 and you're on the level, how many pounds of turbo boost are you developing?
If I'm in 12th, I'm right around five to I say around five. Today was the first day that I was really experimenting with it. Yeah, I can keep it under 5 on the level if I'm 1450, yeah.
Next question is, when you're in 13th?
It tends, I have a harder time keeping it under 5. It starts going more between 7 and 10.
Sure, because you're going faster. You're going faster, and you're not in your direct gear. Well, actually, you're a double over 13, so you're in double over. Just think if you had 264 gears, you'd be able to get that down to around 2 pounds of boost because you would be in direct gear.
That sure would be nice.
Yeah, you'd be in direct gear then and putting more horsepower to the rear wheels for the same amount of fuel consumed, or less fuel consumed, I should say.
Right.
So,
okay.
My rule has always been if you can be under 10, but that's even high for today to try to hit the 7 and 8 mile per gallon. So I'm going to have to go because the doctor's coming into the room here, but I think I might have a minute. So keep it around that 1450. Okay. And so long as you're under 8 pounds of boost, you're still going pretty good. If you want to go a little faster, if you have a chance to sell those 370 gears and get 264s, that would be wonderful.
It really would. They're relatively new, too. I mean, they were when I got the truck. So, and that'll probably be down the line. I got a bunch of things to do in between then. But, yeah, I'd love to have different gears on this truck. All right. Well, I appreciate the input. You got it. I actually need to come see you guys for some engine work here when the weather gets a little better up that way.
Okay. All right. Fantastic.
We look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, let's head off.
Kevin, I have to get off the phone now because the doctor's coming in. So,
all right.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Good luck. Talk to you later.
Bye, Bruce.
All right. Let's head off to Michigan. Robin, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I'm considering buying a newer truck, a 2012 Volvo 780, and it's got a Cummins ISX in it. My question, actually twofold, are there any years to stay away from with an ISX, and what improvements can you guys do for?
I would stick with the 11 or newer.
Yeah, I personally like the newer ones better. It's also given Cummins a time to work out a few of their problems they initially had. So you see, you know, not that they're perfect still, but you see a better reliability in EGR valves in the after-treatment system.
And we can do tuning on that. We're going to have one of our soot separators available for that. The usuals, dampers, balancers, the basics. They run great. That's a great engine. We've really come to like that in the last year or so.
The improvements you do, is it just for fuel economy, or does it make the emissions run better?
It's more for performance. Actually, you do find some fuel economy after you learn how to drive it. The emissions do run better. The exhaust temperature is increased a touch. There are a couple of things that if you see fewer regens, and we've managed to eliminate some of the headache babysitters, we like to call them. So you can, the emission system is fully functional, and you'll still get a check engine light if something's wrong, but you'll find yourself derated less often or pulled off to the side with a mandated regen less often. There's some settings in there that we could work with to keep that stuff from being so cumbersome.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. That's all I got. Thanks.
All right.
You're welcome.
Good stuff. Let's see. We are off to Idaho. Steve, welcome to the program. I think we were just talking about you.
Hey there, Kevin. Yeah, you are talking about me. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, that was Sunday, not yesterday. You're on the radio way too much. Your days run together. But anyway, I wanted to give you guys some props. I am here to tell you that the guys at T&E, I mean, they did an awesome job. But he said Lloyd was on the other end, I believe. And I want to tell Lloyd thank you, because the truck's running better than it ever has. And we had one of those Cummins motors that likes to puff smoke. And we haven't seen one puff since we got this thing set up. And I'm just real, real pleased with it. I do have one question. They were only able to get 550 at the crank. And I'm wondering, is there something? Oh, go ahead.
That would be at the wheels, actually. That should have been 550 at the wheels, don't you think?
I'd have to see which
one you
did.
Yeah, it should have been 550 at the wheels and probably about 1900, 1850 or so on the torque, I'd think. But I'll have to look and see what he put on there. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some
yeah,
just seem to produce, wondering. But. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering if we get up to Pennsylvania, if we come in and throw it on the dyno, can you guys make some tweaks without me having to come off my wallet real big again?
Absolutely. On those on those bigger tunes there, the ones for the our higher dollar tunes like that, we offer we'll dyno that for you if you get by here, no problem.
All right,
and we could maybe make a couple adjustments to it. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be awesome. This is, I'm going to tell you straight up, Road Kings were my number one purchase as far as bang for the buck, but not now. You guys just beat out my Road Kings. If you know Kevin, Kevin will tell you, I love my Road Kings. So,
awesome.
you guys did an amazing job, and I just want to say thanks.
Well, you're welcome. We're pretty proud of that one.
All
I'm
right.
glad you're happy with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great stuff. Let's see. We're going to start a call. We'll probably have to carry it through the break. We're going to head off to Alberta. Mike, welcome to the program.
How are you?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I just bought a brand new 2016 389 Pete with a 550 2050 torque ISX. And I wanted to send you guys the ECM. I can get that program. I'm just kind of curious on cost and I heard you saying earlier you don't have your kit ready yet for the separator, but I definitely would like to put that on it too.
Yeah, we will be probably be a month or two out on the soot separator. Look for us. If you come to the Louisville Truck Show, we'll have a display there, and we'll have more details by then. So the tuning on that, I'm not sure. If you could get by one of our remote locations, that might be a better option than sending us the ECM.
You got any in?
Hold that thought.
I'm not sure that we're set up. Can
hold that thought. We're going to get to a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that right after this. Don't go away. We've got more stuff right around the corner. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we were talking with Mike in Alberta. So, John, go ahead.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, Ethan corrected me while we were on break there. We can do that one on the bench. So, yeah, if you get that to us, we could definitely do a tune on it for you.
Okay, fantastic. Because, yeah, when I had it in the shop putting fenders and stuff on, I figured, well, I might as well just tear that ECM off and send it to you.
Yep, just mail it down here. We'll do the same treatment we did to the previous caller and get it back to you.
Sounds good.
All right.
All righty. Well, thanks, guys.
All right.
You're welcome.
Great. Let's head to Minnesota. Jack, welcome to the program.
Well, hi there, guys. How are you doing?
Good. What's good. On your mind today?
Well, I'm the N14 that called about a month and a half ago about having Pittsburgh Power do an auto frame. And what I'm trying to do is get everything in the works. And my question was to Bruce, but I'm sure one of the other boys can answer it. I want to kind of know how long it's going to take, because and if they have storage for a trailer, because I'll be coming there, dropping my trailer, leaving the truck and flying back home. And then when it's done, I'll fly back and get the truck and the trailer and reload to wherever.
Let's see. We've got plenty of room for your trailer. That's not an issue. To do an out of frame like that, if you bring us the engine that's out already, is going to be somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks. We've got to, once we disassemble it, we send it off to machine shop. Some of the machine work is not done in-house here, and we sometimes have a bit of a backup there. So the engine block itself, we've got a very good shop that does the stuff for us that really, really good guys. It's not worth ramping up on our own to do that. So they'll do the line bore and straighten the crank and polish the crank and balance the crank, and we'll and surface the block for us, as well as hot tank it all too. So we'll have it all, you know, acid dipped and cleaned before it comes back. Now, the rest of the work we do here. But so normally they're gone for about a week, but sometimes that runs a day or two long. So, you know, it takes us a couple of days to get it apart, get it over there, gone for a week, and then a few days to put it together. So you could count on 3 weeks, possibly a little bit longer.
Maybe I should pencil about a month then.
A month would be ideal.
You know, well, because once we tear into it, Bruce was saying something about, you know, there's 2 million miles on it. And I'm restoring the whole thing, and the transmission hasn't, I mean, everything's working great, but the tranny wasn't even anything done with that, so I'm figuring I'm going through that. The cab mounts, because it's going from you to get painted probably in the fall. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I just want a ballpark figure, so, because I can get another truck to drive. And maybe I'll just drive the truck out there to you, just bobtail it, you know.
That'd be fine. Yep.
Yep. Whatever there. Okay. Well, that's all I had. And, yeah, you guys have done work on my truck, you know, and, just like the other guy, I mean, you haven't even went into depth on mine. Just, set the overhead. I dropped a push rod. And you put a muffler on for me, and I mean, I'm getting 7.8, 7.6, and I mean, it's in a 2,000 9,900. So I mean, the only aerodyne on it is the hood scoop on top. You know, I got a great big, yeah. Well, I got a moose bumper from Canada, and
right.
I mean it, but I mean I argued with Kevin, because I was from the old school of no, running 65-70 best fuel mileage. I slowed down to 58, and yeah, I had to eat my words. But
now those are you know, just think about that whole story, John. We're talking about a vehicle that is 17 years old, has 2
yep.
million miles on it. The drivetrain hasn't been touched. And it's getting over 7.5 miles to the gallon. I can't imagine a better value in a truck. Do you know how much net revenue that truck has generated in 2 million miles?
17 years. Got to do a math on that. We could come up with a little spreadsheet for figuring that out. That'd be awesome.
You know, we hear the talking heads on TV talking about return on investment in the stock market. How about this? How about the return on investment on that truck? What that thing's generated, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yep. Yeah. You know, amazing little businesses rolling up and down the road there. I'm all about that. And those old N14s are just workhorses. I mean, to get that kind of mileage on, still get that kind of mileage. That's just amazing. That's just an amazing piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Let's go to Oklahoma. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello, are you speaking to me? I'm sorry.
Yep, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a 97 FLD 120. It's got an N14, 10-speed, 285 gears. after tax time, I'm thinking of pulling the motor out. While I got it out, wanted to put a 13 speed in, and I'm just wondering how much that'll improve anything. And after I put it together, what are some of the add-ons that we can do from the shop that'll help me?
Now, the first thing we have to address there is if you have 285 gears, then that's a 10 speed direct. So when you go to the 13, you could either find a 13 direct, pretty rare, find a single overdrive 13 speed, pretty rare, or you're going to end up with the double overdrive 13, which is the most common, meaning you would drive the truck in 11th gear. You would have wealth to, you know, go faster when you wanted to, and you would have 13th. So when the cops were chasing you and they didn't want to stop, you wouldn't have to.
Oh, they stopped me enough.
That'd be an honest 100-mile-an-hour truck with a double over 13 in there.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to do. What the 13 speed is going to buy you. Yeah.
As far as fuel mileage gain, I will tell you this. You will never pay for the transmission on fuel mileage gain. They're going to be minimal at best. If your dedicated run was Denver to Los Angeles, we might see some increase because of all the pulling, and the 13 speed might help a little bit there. But other than that, you're not going to see any big fuel mileage increase from that transmission change.
Okay. Yeah, I used to get about 7.5 averaging when I first bought the truck in 04, and I've got about 1.8 million on it now. I'm thinking it's time to cut my chances and pull it out and do something. So I'd like to get it back up to that, you know.
Yeah, and I think you will. I mean, as engines wear out, they become less and less efficient. More of that combustion is ending up in the crankcase instead of the wheels with power. So you'll get it back. I just, like I say, if you know, a 13-speed, we might be able to make it a little more drivable. I'd love to see a 13-speed single overdrive. If I were going to put a different transmission in this truck, that's what I would put. Then you would run in 12th. And have that one true overdrive gear when you wanted to go faster. That would be the ideal transmission. But again, you know, you're talking anywhere from $6,000 to $8,000 to do a transmission, sometimes more, and you're just never going to make it back in fuel mileage.
Yeah, I just prefer a 13, and when I bought this, I couldn't find one. I had to settle for this 10.
I got plenty of time.
I'll start looking.
I would take your time and look for that 13-speed single over. That would be ideal.
All right, I'll do it. And thank you for everything you do.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Illinois. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, gentlemen. Hey, we've been following. I've got a 12.7 DDEC 4 that starting in November, I started having some starting problem issues. Of course, when we're chasing them, everybody looks at it and sees the fast, and well, there's your problem right there. It's in that. So I pull the fast off and completely off the truck, and we're still chasing the starting problem issues. More times than not, it takes either to get it started. About a month ago, I also started having some engine shutdown issues. On the road, it would momentarily shut off, and then it would power back up. At an idle, sometimes it would surge up and shut off. So I put your loaner ECM on it, and all the problems go away. What is the process?
Hold that thought, and we will get to it right away. I think the question was going to be the process on rebuilding the old ECM, but I don't want to rush it. We'll get right back to the calls and questions right after this break. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the final segment of this first hour. We're going to come back into a second hour of general questions. Looks like we've got a lot of questions on the line. But if you want to, you might be able to get through still. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. We'll get to you in the next hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we were talking with Mike in Illinois. Mike, go ahead.
So we put the loaner ECM on, and the starting problem immediately goes away. The shutdown problem goes away. So obviously we have an ECM issue, and I'm going to be sending that back today to your shop. How does this process work? I mean, do you? I'd really like to come back to the shop and have it put back on when we take your loaner off. But how do you do that? How do you rebuild the ECM? How do you do the parameters and that kind of thing?
It depends on what's wrong with the ECM. If it's got different inside the circuit paper, if the problem's within there, you're better off with a new one than us fixing it. If it's just a chip issue, it's possible to be fixed. I'd have to see the ECM before we can determine what's wrong with it.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, the loaner's on there. Is there any possibility of just changing the parameters on the loaner and going that direction?
It's possible.
So what would you suggest? I mean, where do you think we ought to go? Just get it, send you the ECM, take a look at it, and make a decision from that point?
Yes, that would be the way I would go.
Okay. All right. Well, you should have it in a day or so I appreciate your help.
Okay, I'll be looking forward to seeing it.
All right.
Thanks. All right. Great stuff. Let's head off to Washington. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, I've got a 2013 T660 Kenworth with a PACCAR MX-10, and I've had a lot of trouble with it, and finally, a buddy of mine works at Peterbilt's got the bugs worked out, but I'm still experimenting with stuff like oil and trying to raise my fuel mileage. What would you suggest is a full synthetic? I mean, I'm running a synthetic blend now, but is a full synthetic worth the extra few hundred bucks when it comes to fuel mileage and lasting longer or anything like that?
How often are you changing your oil?
On the synthetic blend, every 40,000. I put in 1 gallon of oil in those 40,000 miles, and I'm not sure that it was burned or if just Speedco didn't fill it up all the way when they did it.
Yeah, you know, at 40,000 mile oil changes, you're not going to save enough in fuel economy to warrant the extra cost. The synthetic blend is probably working just fine. If you went to, say, an OPS and, you know, that engine with an OPS, you would probably be doing 200,000 mile oil changes, and then the synthetic becomes worth it.
I think I'll definitely start looking at your OPS. One more question. I'm looking at a brand new W900. I'm going to add a second truck. I hear you talk about how you're starting to like the PACCAR engines. Would it be worth it to stay away from the Cummins and go with the PACCAR, the new PACCAR MX-13?
I still prefer, we're not quite there with the PACCAR yet. I've heard some good things about it. We've had a couple of problem ones through the shop. And just being completely selfish here, we're not there with it yet. And we're quite happy with the new Cummins. There's no reason to stay away from that new Cummins at all.
Some of the stuff
that the PACCAR shares with the Cummins, you'd have the same problems of the shall we say, problematic systems associated with the Cummins. Well, the PACCAR shares the same parts. So you wouldn't be staying away from any problem that's specific to Cummins by going with the PACCAR. And the Cummins, we've got more abilities right now. We're striving to achieve those same abilities. And I said on the show last week, we've got two of the three pieces of the puzzle in place, and we're still waiting for the third right now to be able to do the similar tuning on the PACCAR. But there's no reason whatsoever to stay away from the ISX or the X15, as it's going to be called now. They've really worked out a lot of the bugs. They've got the after treatment system, you know, really figured out. It works quite well. It's a nice piece, and it's quiet and smooth. And yeah, we've got a customer that just switched from a glider that he put a whole lot of money and effort and time into and worked really hard to get fuel mileage out of, and got frustrated with the project after some engine issues that weren't really related to us, and just threw his hands up and went out and bought a brand new Pete with an ISX in it, and is thrilled to death with it. He's almost matching his mileage he was getting with his glider, and it's quiet and it's smooth, and no one grouses about warranty when he goes to get it worked on, and it's a far better business decision for him than the glider was even. So yeah, they're pretty solid now. I don't think you have much problem with it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm really starting to fall in love with this PACCAR. I mean, this is the older one, and after getting several injectors and unit pumps changed out, they quit leaking and causing more soot buildup, so I don't have any more DPF issues. And it's right. A really, really good running engine, and I've been hearing that the MX-13s were even better. But I've also had a lot of experience with the big 550 Cummins and the 475s, and you know, in my years of towing. So I was just kind of wondering where you were at on that. And I know y'all guys are working on getting your PACCAR stuff, you know, getting up to date and where you can start doing more to them. And I've been listening. I listen every week and waiting on you to say, bring them on. So
we're getting close. We're getting really close with it. That 13 and newer, I've not seen one of those in the shop yet, the new MX-13, but it's almost as smooth and quiet as that ISX is, if it's not as smooth and quiet. It's gone away from the 6-unit pumps, and it's only got two that it uses as a booster on the common rail. So it's a common rail system now, and it still uses two of those unit pumps to give a little extra pulse to the fuel pressure. So it's an interesting piece. It should have a whole lot less problems than the earlier ones. But like I said, my reasoning is somewhat selfish. We have really good luck with the ISX, and we've got a lot of abilities with it. And I hope to achieve the same thing with the MX, but we're just not there yet.
Excellent. Let's head off to Minnesota. Derek, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind today?
I got a couple questions. Do you want the hard one or the easy one first, John and Ethan?
Oh, the easy one. Easy
oh,
one,
okay.
Please.
It's 99 Kenworth with the N14, and I'm kind of curious. It doesn't idle very smooth, and my fuel mileage is, you know, not that great. And I was thinking about coming out to you guys to get the, you know, some tuning done and things like that. I was curious, what tune would you do on this, and does your tuning like, can you change the idle and stuff? Like, is there trim codes or anything like that that you can adjust on the N14 or not?
There's no trim codes on the N14,
yeah.
But the idle could be related to another issue, air in the fuel restriction. It's something along that line. So, you know, all the basics would need checked over. We do offer tuning there, and I've done several on the dyno, and guys have loved them so far. But you know, it's best on the dyno too, but yeah, we can definitely know what horsepower we can take it to depends on what CPL you have.
Yeah. And, I don't know if it helps you right now or not, but the CPL is 2391.
I don't know that one off the top of my head. I've heard of it, but I don't remember all the numbers associated with it. I have a big list at my desk.
So the best thing to do would just be bring it out and have you guys kind of look it over then.
Yeah, and see what's causing this issue with the idle.
So
yeah,
what we would do is we'd put sensors on it for everything, fuel pressure restriction, a sight glass to look for air, and give it a run on the dyno and see exactly what's going on. So we'd know, we could instrument the whole thing up and then log all that data while we run it and then study it afterwards to see what's going on.
Sure. And that actually would be a part of my second question is I have a very unique issue that comes up when it gets cold out, like when it gets down around, you know, 0 or 10 degrees, you know, it's, when it gets substantially cold out, when you'll pull, like when you're driving it and then you slow down and then you start shifting again, it almost acts like it's like running out of fuel, or it starts to like pop and kind of just doesn't run very good at all when you start to pull on it. And but then, you know, if it's warmer, it doesn't do it at all. And that was my second question, was is there some sort of sensor or something that would be sensitive to the outside air temperature?
There absolutely could be there. Any of the sensors on the engine could have that problem where they get cold and starts not function properly. It, by the sounds of it, it's more likely a temp sensor than a pressure sensor. But the best way to be able to see it when it's cold, there's a few basic sensors we could just change out, being the age of the truck and that they're probably original. So a good idea would be to change those sensors out.
Okay, yeah.
With that, we're going to have to wrap it up. The music's playing. We're all out of time. I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next show. Thanks for joining us. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good night, everyone.
Alrighty, everybody, it looks like we're having some audio issues over here today, so we are going to wrap it up for today. Make sure to join us tomorrow for Destination Health. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.